Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Hello, this is Mike Zlatnik from the Big Mike Fund Podcast. Welcome. I'd like to introduce our first guest, Corey Boatwright, a great real estate entrepreneur, educator, coach, and investor. Corey lives in the greater Oklahoma City area. He's a great friend, and I'm delighted to have him on this podcast. Welcome, Corey.
Hi, Mike. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Looks like you got some things going on behind you there.
Yes, I do.
Mike, I'm excited. This is, what, the first episode of the podcast?
Yes, it is. It's our first podcast. So it's great to have this going, and I appreciate you coming on this podcast as the first guest.
I appreciate you having me. You know, we worked on the book, and the book has been really successful. I've been seeing so many great comments about it. You're looking at your comments on Amazon, they're great. And I know everybody that has read that book, it's a short read. So I think what I've heard is people can get the book and they can almost just get through the whole book on a plane ride, which I think is great. So I'm glad that book resonated so well. And many people are learning about real estate investing with the real estate fund. And I know that you're the foremost expert that I know of on investing, and specifically for funds. So I think this is going to be a great idea for you on this podcast.
First of all, I greatly appreciate all your help getting this book launched. This is an area of my passion, expertise. It's also something that I absolutely love doing. And this book is a product of a lot of work, a lot of experience, a lot of personal growth. And I appreciate, once again, all your help getting this book out. We're going to talk about this book and this podcast. It's something that I believe many, many, many investors would greatly benefit from, learning how to invest in real estate funds, how to ask the right questions, how to educate themselves, and make educated decisions, understanding with eyes wide open what they're investing in, understanding the risks, the rewards, and having these great questions before they make the investment.
Yes. Absolutely. And you know, I think it'd be good just to really just kind of go through those same questions that are on the book, and maybe even delve into a couple other ones that were not mentioned in the book. But I know the biggest one that stands out, it always is whenever I'm talking with investors, is the safety. What they have a concern is safety on, how safe is their investment whenever they put those funds into a real estate fund.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's the number one question. That's the question everybody asks, and they expect a wonderful answer. They expect something to hear along the lines, well, it's guaranteed, it's secure, it's safe. And the moment they hear those words, they got to be aware who said those words, who was the biggest pusher of guaranteed, secure, safe investments. And you've heard of him, and he's serving a long sentence, the infamous Bernie Madoff. So the moment you hear those words, be very careful. Guaranteed secure safe investments typically are U.S. government bonds. They are insured by the wealth of the United States government, the full taxation system. So those are guaranteed investments, but what kind of returns do they give? They are safe, but the level of return is very low. So the moment people invest into any kind of a fund that is likely to deliver strong returns, just for the sake of the argument, let's just say 10% for the sake of the argument. Do you think this investment is a safe, secure, guaranteed? So having that guarantee is completely fake, bogus. It doesn't exist. So the fund safety comes not from the guarantees. Fund safety comes from the underlying strategy, from what the fund management team is doing, what kind of deals they invest in, what kind of due diligence they do. What is their subject matter expertise? Also, fund safety comes from the fund diversification. If the fund invests into many asset classes across various geographic regions, various types of investments with different project sponsors or borrowers, that creates safety. So fund strategy, fund diversification, good underwriting of project sponsors and borrowers, and specific project underwriting is what makes a fund safe. So how safe is the investment? Well, it really depends on the fund management, the fund structure, and the strategy.
That makes sense. And, you know, there's all these different ways that you can make money, high ROI. What comes from investing in a real estate fund? What is the ROI or a typical ROI that's projected when investing in, specifically with the TF Management Fund, your fund right now? What does that look like?
So I'll give you an example of our investment, and we will talk a little bit about our flagship fund, Tampa Opportunity Fund, LLC. Most of the funds operate in similar fashion. So when you invest in a real estate fund, you expect typically two types of returns. You expect the cash flow, and you expect some level of appreciation. It's not always appreciation. Some funds invest purely for income. That's what they're called, income funds. There are growth funds, and there are growth and income funds. So ROI, return on investment, is typically broken into two components. And when you're looking to invest, you should understand the breakdown. So how much cash does the fund generate based on its strategy? The cash could come from, if it makes loans, it could come as interest received on the loans. If it makes long-term equity investments, it could come from rent collected and similar cash-generating assets. On the appreciation side, on the growth side, fund strategy enables the fund to grow the wealth of the portfolio over time. And that growth comes in the form of appreciation. Now, what we invest in is typically projects that have forced appreciation. We don't like the appreciation to just happen. It does happen. We benefit from the appreciation, the tide that rises all boats. But what we do is a little different. Is what is called forced appreciation is the work that gets done, the projects that get rehabbed, redeveloped, that increases the value of those assets, and that produces forced appreciation.
So an example of that, Mike, for some that may be listening and not familiar with that term, the way that my understanding is of the forced appreciation is you look at value add situations where there is a need to be able to increase something in order to get a stronger return. For example, if it was in the multifamily space, maybe the electric that you were using there could be changed over to LED lighting. And because of that, it would increase your net. And then from that, your appreciation of the property would go up considerably. Because of that, you're not waiting on appreciation. You're basically creating the appreciation from doing the fix-ups and doing the value add. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So the classic example is a multifamily project where apartments get renovated. And as they get renovated, upon renewal of leases are renewed at a higher rate. Why? Because the apartments have been renovated. Just like you mentioned, common areas could be renovated. Cost-saving lighting could be installed. Could be a clubhouse built, maybe a community pool. So as those improvements happen in the whole area, the demand for those apartments increases because they look better. And then so the rents, and so is the cash flow. And as the cash flow increases, the net operating income of those projects increases. And then ultimately the value increases of the whole asset because it's a much more valuable piece of real estate with better cash flow, with better facilities, better apartments, and so on.
Right. If your net, if your NOI increases, then essentially your appreciation of the property, the value of the property, is going to be considerably appreciated as well.
Yeah, because it trades at the multiple of income. So that's the basics. So again, back to the ROI. Whenever you're looking at the fund, you're looking at the total return, and the total return is broken down into cash flow and appreciation. Those are the main things to remember.
Got it. Okay. You know, how is it treated from a cash perspective? Can you speak to that? Like, how is the fund income, how is it treated? So when the cash comes in and it's being distributed, how is that treated?
So Depending on the fund structure, there are, generally speaking, a couple of types of funds you invest in. There are real estate investment trusts, REITs, and general purpose funds. And most of the funds, when people invest, they invest in the equity of these funds, and then they receive K-1 income. They receive essentially what is known as a partnership income for tax purposes. And the K-1 income, the beauty of it is that if the fund owns real estate assets outright, those assets depreciate. So the K-1 statements can pass through depreciation from the fund assets into individual investor K-1 statements. So from a tax perspective, the income derived gets the benefit of the reduced taxes from the depreciation side. On the other side, the instruments that, for example, we have in the fund that are notes. So we invest in fix and flip projects as hard money loans. We make loans to folks that repair projects and resell, and these loans generate interest income. So interest income is taxable as an interest, and then the cash flow from long-term equity projects is taxed at a cash flow level minus the depreciation. So it is most of the times very suitable for self-directed IRA investors. It is suitable for non-IRA investors, and the depreciation helps in both cases.
So going back to that last part there about the return on investment, the ROI for a real estate fund, and particularly if you want to speak to the Tempo Management Fund, what is really the difference between the IRR, the internal rate of return, compared to the preferred rate of return? Can you speak to that? And can you also talk about what your projected is for your fund right now?
Sure, Corey. So these are great questions. The IRR is the total return. So it's internal rate of return, and it is an annualized return. So when you hear the term IRR, it simply means what is the total annualized return. So if it spends 5 years, it means, you know, per year that was the average return. Tempo Opportunity Fund is structured to have preferred return, and then it has a performance split above the preferred return. So investors receive 7% preferred return, and then there's a performance split above the preferred return. Not all funds are structured this way, but it is one of the most fair ways to set up the investment vehicle.
Not using the word guarantee here, right? But as close as you probably can get to the word guarantee, right? That's what that 7% preferred return means?
Yes. I don't like the word guarantee. We're not providing guarantee, but it is most senior return after the expenses are paid, management fees are paid, before the fund management company receives any performance fees. First, 7% preferred return has to be paid to investors. If we're not able to pay one quarter, we're required to catch up the following quarter. So the first 7% goes to investors, and then there is a split. So the split we have in the fund, we typically have three classes of units, A, B, and C, and the A units receive 80-20 split. They receive 80% of the upside above 7% pref, and the B units receive 70-30 split, and then the C units are 60-40. So in this particular example, again, this is an example of our fund. Not all funds are the same, but this is a kind of a classic example. The way the fund management company gets paid, it receives 2% management fee and then receives a performance split. So it's either 20, 30, or 40%, that's it. The rest of the income goes to the fund investors, starting with a 7% pref. It's not guaranteed, but it is preferential return.
And the A return, the A, B, the C units, the A essentially is the best, and that would be someone that maybe wants to put more money in, correct?
That's right. So in order to get A units, you have to invest $1 million or more. In order to get B units, you have to invest at least $500,000, and then everything below $500,000 is C units. So it is done to encourage investors to put more capital in.
So the 7% preferred essentially is paid after the 2% for the fund management, correct?
That's right. We got to keep the lights on.
Got to keep the lights on, right. So the 2% goes to the fund, the 7%, then anything above and beyond that is split according to the A, B, or C units that we just discussed, either an 80-20 at the $1 million rate, the B units at the 70-30, or the C at the 60 40 as of right now. Where is the target for the full rate for the fund right now, including the preferred? What's your target for this fund that you are working on right now, delivering to your investors or the ROI?
That's right. So the target is 10 to 13% total return. We've underwritten this pretty conservatively, and we've underwritten this for C units. So what that means is units B and A should do better. So we've underwritten our financial model targets to get approximately 10 to 13% return to C units, and then A and B will do better.
So you over-deliver essentially in that concept and undervalued at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a total return, call it IRR, and it's composed of the cash flow and appreciation. And the first 7%, our business model and financial model is such that we target to generate at least 7% preferred return in the form of cash. And we're trying to do even better than that. But the rest of the return will come either as cash available, or it'll come as appreciation in the shares of the fund. So as the assets appreciate, as we go through innovation projects, we appreciate the shares according to the general acceptable accounting principles.
Well, how easy is it? I guess this is another question. You know, life happens. There's things that kind of go up and down, and you thought, you know, one day you had a lot of money and next day you need that money. How easy is it to get the money out, Mike? That's a question that comes up. What's the liquidity of that if they're investing in the fund?
So, Corey, that's a great question. Probably second most important question, how safe the investment is, how, you know, easy for you to get the money out. So we generally have, and not just us, other funds that invest into growth have, well, we invest in growth and income, but there's a growth element. They have two components. Component number one is they have a lock-in period. So lock-in period is the amount of time that you should not be withdrawing your money out. You can ask an emergency withdrawal, and to the best of our ability, we will honor it. So if you had an emergency situation, after a year and a half, you have the money in, and you'd like to request your funds out, we'll make every effort to help you. It's not guaranteed return on the money, but it is definitely something that we will try to do. Beyond 2 years, you can request a redemption, and then you go in the queue of redemption. So if you requested a redemption, another investor requested a redemption, we create a queue of redemptions, and this is how we redeem investors. Now, the redemption comes from the available cash in the fund. And let me talk a little bit about where the fund gets its cash.
So that before you go into that, because I think that's going to go into another quadrant, let's finish this thought on how long that you're expecting. So when someone wants to invest with you or with funds, generally is it they should expect that their money's going to be working for them for the next year? You know, 2 years, year and a half, what's kind of the target of what they should have the expectation when they put the money in so they're not concerned about pulling it out?
Corey, another great question. So the expectation is it's a long-term investment. In other words, I would say 2 years plus. So realistically speaking, ideally, you should have a five-year horizon or longer. 3-year horizon, 2 years is acceptable, but you should not be investing in a fund that has 2-year lock-in when you want the money out in 1 year. That's not the right move. If you have at least 2 years time horizon, you can invest in a fund with 2-year lock-in. So the longer the better, but obviously you should not invest the money you're gonna need in the short term. If your kids are going to college in a year, that's not the right opportunity for you. But if your kid's going to college in 5 years or 10 years, this is very different.
Yes, okay, let's talk about the other quadrant you're gonna go into.
So the fund liquidity comes from three sources, and I wanted to explain this is how we are able to redeem shares when redemption requests come in. So number one is the cash flow from investments. So we invest into projects, into hard money loans, and they pay us interest. We invest in long-term projects, they pay us quarterly returns, and that's the cash flow from investments. The second one comes from the sale of investments. We invest into two types of assets. We invest in a hard money loan, and roughly, again, I'm just talking about our fund. Different funds have different strategies, and these strategies vary. So you have to be very careful to understand what the strategy. In our case, roughly half the money we invest in short duration bridge loans for fix and flip projects. Most of these loans have approximately 6 months time horizon till they repay. So our velocity of money is generally decent. on these short-term fix and flip projects. The other 50% of the money gets invested in the long-term projects. And those projects don't have very short exit strategy. They have multi-year exit strategy. So we maintain our liquidity and our ability to redeem shares by roughly investing half the money in the short-term projects, which is actually a pretty strong number. A lot of funds invest in the bulk of their money in the long-term projects.
Mike, this can also speak to maybe a conservative and a little bit more aggressive play, right? The aggressive play would be more the hard money loans, right? Because the money and the velocity is you get a higher return on those, you get a higher payback, but then you also are looking at longer term, loans and longer term investment plays with your investors, correct?
It's actually the opposite. The reason it's the opposite is that the hard money loans are debt investments. We're making loans secured by real estate. They're
okay.
Safer.
That makes sense. Safer that way. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Than the long-term equity deals. So long-term equity deals, you're participating as an equity player, and we actually borrow money at the long-term cheap rates, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae mortgages at the great rates, but we are equity position. So equity is generally a little bit more riskier than the debt. So hard money loans have higher degree of safety than the long-term equity investments. But the returns on the long-term equity projects, overall returns, the IRR, is higher because not only they generate the cash flow, but they have an appreciation element.
And the point I'm making there is there's a blend. You do your best to blend both together so you can get a little bit safer plays and a little bit more risky plays so you can have a higher return.
Exactly. Exactly correct. And then let me just go back to the original question. So you ask where the cash comes from to redeem shares if people are looking to pull their money out. So the third element are the new subscriptions. So we are able to sell, or the loans get repaid, or we sell assets, and that creates liquidity. And the third element of liquidity are new subscriptions. So as the fund grows, more and more investors put their money in, and that enables us to redeem old investors. So that's the third element of liquidity.
So the fund needs to be growing at a pretty decent clip. So are you communicating with your investors, and how often are you on what's going on with the fund?
So it's a great question. We have quarterly communication process. So we send an email updating investors. We also hold quarterly investor update phone calls, giving investors an update on the new capital raise, on the existing investments, what are the past investments that we made and how they're performing. If they're going through renovation phases, where those phases are at, what's happening with those projects, plus any new investments that we've made. So we're updating essentially on the entire portfolio to the best of our ability on a conference call or an email, keeping investors up to date as much as we can. That's the communication mechanism. We're trying to improve. We're learning. So to be honest, we want to give investors just the right amount of communication. Most investors are very busy people, and we don't want to overload them with information, but we don't want to give them enough so they feel comfortable that the investments are working well, they're well taken care of. And from our perspective, we don't need to grow at any rapid pace. We have no hard targets on what we need to grow at. We're making investments, we're monitoring the investments, and we are raising capital absolutely organically. So mostly referrals from existing investors. We're not promoting the fund anywhere. It's friends and family, word of mouth type of referrals. And we are trying to produce great results and let the results speak for themselves. So there's no mad rush to raise capital. In fact, we're trying to raise at a manageable pace. We have strong deal flow, but if somebody came in and wanted to write a big check and we didn't have the deal flow, we would say no because we wouldn't be able to put the money to work. So we would be very smart about taking just the right amount of money so we can deploy and deploy well, and then go look for more capital for the next set of opportunities.
I think that's another good reason that why folks should work with you and the integrity of how your approach is to investing. One of the things I've always been impressed with you is not doing more than what you think you can execute on and deliver. And that's something I've always appreciated because so many people are so gung-ho to get more funds than needed and all these other things. But your approach to how you invest and working with investors is that you treat their money like it's your money, and you treat that fund as if it was, you know, your own personal fund. And so those things with that personal investing mentality, I think that's one of the key indicators that really investors that are listening to this right now that have some fund money set aside that maybe only be getting 3 or 4% or, you know, so maybe they have one in a Roth IRA somewhere or 401k or funds sitting in a savings somewhere and they're just not getting the return that they want. But there's that feeling that if I move that money somewhere else, I may lose it, right? There's that feeling of security and feeling of fear. And that comes from my experience talking to investors that, you know, mostly doctors. I have a lot of friends that are doctors and lawyers, and they have funds set aside in these different, you know, savings accounts and money management, but they don't get those 10 and 12 and 13% returns because they don't really understand how this, quote, security of a real estate fund really, how it's set up to help them with that preferred return, with the splits depending on their A, B, or C units, and also the continuing updating of what's going on with the fund. Also, we didn't talk about this too, but you have an extensive track record on dealing with, you know, tens of millions of dollars in management of money through your hard money efforts for your hard money company, also working with other investors with multi-million dollar transactions and returns. I know that that's something that makes a lot of folks feel comfortable too, is they want to know what is that track record. So without tooting your own horn on that, I think people can certainly do a little bit more investigating with what you've been a part of over at Tempo. Is it tempofunds.com or Tempo Investing?
Well, the website is tempofunding.com.
Tempofunding.com. And so there's a section they can read there. And we'll have this in the show notes to also check out some of the things that obviously you've been a part of. But I want to ask another question about that, the fees, because I know that comes up too. Is the 2% the only fee, or what are the fees involved with the management fund?
This is another great question, and it's an extremely important question, because when you're making a decision to invest into any fund, you should understand how the management company gets paid and what fees they collect. The management fee, annual management fee, is the only fee that we charge. Specifically, Tempo Opportunity Fund, and again, I'm using this as an example, does not have any asset level fees. So when we go underwrite the deal and we invest fund capital into the deal, the fund management doesn't get paid any fees. We only get paid when that investment performs. I do know plenty of other funds that charge asset acquisition fees. So I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying you got to be aware. So what can happen is a fund manager can charge the fund 1 or 2% asset acquisition fee, and on a large investment, it could be sizable. So it reduces the yield to the fund in that investment. But again, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying you got to be aware. The other type of fees I've seen is that I'm in a hard money space, one of a core expertise, and we charge points, loan origination fees. And these fees, depending on the type of fund, the manager can keep some of these fees, can keep all the fees, or keep no fees. So Tempo Opportunity Fund, for example, when it funds a deal, all the fees go to the fund. They don't go to the manager. So that's the strength of that fund, is that actually gets 100% of the fees, not 50%, not 20%, but 100%. But knowing that is really important. So when you're investing in a fund and then the fund manager charges the fees and keeps them, it reduces the yield to the fund. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that you got to be aware. So those are the kinds of fees. And then on a previous point, I wanted to speak a little bit about. So as you are considering potentially making an investment, not just our fund, any fund, definitely should look at the management team. That's probably one of the most important elements, is the management team integrity. There's their teams who could tell you there are zero fees, and behind the scenes, they can find a way to charge you extra fees. So having integrity, having experience, track record are critical elements to your decision whether to invest with people. If I remember correctly, the most common saying is this: people invest with people who they like, know, and trust. So it comes down to that, those three elements. So before making an investment, get to know your fund managers. It's very difficult to do with humongous funds when they are, you know, 40,000 pound gorillas. At that point, you don't have a choice. I mean, if you're investing into REIT managed by Vanguard, you're not going to go meet the manager of Vanguard. But if you're investing in a smaller fund, you absolutely should at least have a conversation, maybe meet, have a cup of coffee, to the best of your ability, spend a little bit of time getting to know your management team. So that's a critical element. You got to like them, you got to know them, and you got to trust them.
I want to speak to that too. Not only have Leslie and I came and visited you at your personal house in New York, you and I have done over the last, I don't know, a handful of years, probably around $2.5 to $3 million in transactions, either dealing with my own deals, my partner's deals, referral deals over to you. We haven't had a single issue with those deals working together with you. So I certainly appreciate that. It's another one of the other reasons I felt comfortable enough to work with you on the consulting side of business for the book and other things, because I believe in what you're doing so much. And we even talked about with our efforts, Sean and I's efforts for multifamily targets, taking some of those funds and put it into your TF management fund. It's something that I wholeheartedly believe in. And I know that our mastermind, great leader, Mr. Medley, has also invested in your fund. One of the leaders there with Kava is also investing in the fund. So many folks that are doing big things with real estate investing that have worked with you, seen you treat people the way that are just, it's outstanding and makes a big difference. Feel like you like, know, and trust is such a key element of working together, not just to get a return, but also long-term. Long-term relationships is where this is going to make the most sense. Not a flash in the pan. So, you know, I'm excited about seeing this thing grow and responsibly. And I just want to say that I appreciate working with you as well.
Corey, I'm grateful to you. you said all those wonderful things about me. I feel blushed. I feel I appreciate your kind thought.
The big Russian is starting to blush. I've done something here that no one else has been able to do.
you make me feel really good. So thank you for the kind word. I want to say that I'm grateful to Medley and Kava and other folks who I know who have investing or investing, and they appreciate and they put their trust in me. So I'm grateful for all that.
Sure, we got Phelps Group. I mean, we got a lot of great folks that are doing things and working with you, believing in you. And I'm excited, just like I said, to see folks listening to this right now. Just from my side, I personally love working with you and refer lots of folks over to you, done a lot of business with you. So how often does the fund pay out right now? That's another question that comes up.
So the funds typically pay, I've seen this is the most common way. The most common way is quarterly. There are funds that pay monthly, and then there are funds that pay annually. Payments quarterly could be too much overhead. There are funds that could do it, and then there are funds that find it difficult to do. We found that the quarterly payments is the golden middle. Annual payments are not sufficiently frequent. Monthly are too frequent, and quarterly payments is probably the most common, the easiest thing to do.
Got it. Okay.
And when investors receive or they're on the distribution time, investors could choose one of the two things. They could choose to receive distributions, or they could choose to reinvest distribution, which is also available option, very commonly used for IRA investors when they don't need the money to go back to IRA. They can reinvest into additional units of the fund.
How are you finding your deals? How are you targeting this type of deal flow? What are the type of deals coming through? We spoke to some of the hard money loans, maybe some of the multifamily, but where are you finding some of these deals right now? How are they being sourced?
So that's another great question that most investors should ask when they are trying to understand the fund they invest in. So our deal flow is very different from a lot of other traditional hard money lenders or investment companies. Many of these funds or investment operators have local presence. So they are focused on their local markets. They know one market and they know the market extremely well, and that's where the success comes from. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a vertical approach. We use horizontal approach. So as you know, we both go to the Collective Genius Mastermind. That's one of the masterminds I go to. I go to four others. I spend time networking with people, let's call them movers and shakers in the industry. So virtually our entire deal flow is coming through relationships that we've formed with people over years. So let me give you some examples. So we have really strong footprint in the hard money space. We funded these people for years, made fix and flip loans, And a lot of them have done really well. Not only that, they've grown and they are making investments in the long-term projects. So the next logical step, I just let them know, and I've let them know many times, what long-term equity projects you have coming up. And essentially, they share their opportunities. We discuss, and then we look to invest in the long term with them. If the project makes sense, we are happy to invest. So this is our approach to sourcing the deals. We also have relationship with other fund managers who find their own strong deal flow, and we feel comfortable to co-invest. So we share deals if the deals are bigger, and we need to join forces with other funds. And we know those funds and we trust them, and we have high degree of understanding of what they do. We'll do our own due diligence, but we're happy to co-invest. So we're basically sourcing, again, deals from other funds, from existing network of folks that we've done business with, and we're expanding the network strictly on a referral basis. So if somebody has a strong referral, we want to know how they've worked with them in the past, what's been their track record, and if that's good, at least that's the first step, and we can take the opportunity to look at their deal.
Is there a specific exit date, or is it a open-ended fund?
So the fund, Temp Opportunity Fund, is an open-ended fund. There are funds that are closed-ended funds.
Okay. So the difference?
Absolutely. So closed-ended funds is very specific. It raises money for the period of, say, the entire 2017, starts January 1st, finishes December 31st, and then it closes. It will not acquire any more assets. It closes up, and then it just lets those assets perform. So it has a finite amount of time to raise capital, and then it runs a certain amount of time, and then it starts winding the portfolio down. These are absolutely common. I've invested in them in the past. Some of these things have been offered even by big banks, but it's a strategy for closed-ended fund. Open-ended funds are known as like evergreen funds. They don't have an exit date. They basically raise capital, they make investments, and then they raise fresh capital. And what happens is the capital comes in. In our case, we determine the portfolio value every quarter, and new folks come in, and then they purchase the shares at whatever price is the right price of that quarter. So there's ongoing purchases and sales of units of the fund based on the mark-to-market approach, as conservative as we can be. There's no exit date. So some investments exit within a couple of years, some exit in a longer term period of time. But ultimately, as investments exit, there's more cash to distribute to investors. So it generates income to investors, but there's no exit date. So it's kind of evergreen, ongoing. It's almost, think of it this way. So if you buy a building with no specific exit plan, so you can buy one asset and you can put your money in that one building, that's all you have. If you don't have an immediate exit date, then you are basically investing for long term. There might come an opportunity when somebody knocks on your door and says, I want to buy a building, and they want to pay you a good price. And at that point, you will sell the building. Or at some point, you're ready to retire, or you're ready to do a 1031 exchange. In both cases, you determine when you want to exit. On a fund level, same concept. Instead of buying one building, we are basically investing into many buildings, maybe syndicated equity deals, bunch of loans, and then we create diversification, which is a strong benefit of the fund. But we have the same upside as if you were to invest, you as the investor, as you invested into a single building. It's just you get the diversification element, and you get much better liquidity because your money is not stuck in one deal, but in many deals. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. Speak just a little bit on the difference, for example, for like a hard money loan or a multifamily fund. You know, a single family compared to multifamily. Is there any kind of specific target that you're looking at there? Or like you mentioned before, you said you're kind of going after, you know, you're looking at both, but is this fund more residential or more multifamily, or is it just a blend?
It's a growth and income opportunistic fund. So our strategy, and again, the different funds that have different strategy, we have to be very dynamic and flexible to respond to market conditions. And as you know, market conditions change quite a bit. So the fund invests in any type of real estate opportunities that make sense. Historically, we have long history of hard money loans in fix and flip projects. So we continue to do that. Some of these assets are residential properties, but they're obviously investment properties. And some of these assets are commercial properties, self-storage facilities, commercial buildings, and we make loans on those properties. On the equity side, we invest. We are fairly flexible to do multifamily, self-storage, portfolios of single-family houses, commercial, as long as the math makes sense. I'll give you a basic view how we invest. So in the hard money space, we essentially look at the total annualized return between the interest we collect, between the points we collect, the fees. So that gross yield between the points, fees, and interest that we collect, we're trying to generate income for the fund in the high teens. So today's target is 18%. Now, is it going to be 18% every year? No. If with further yield compression, it might wind up to be 16%, 17%, 15%. But we're trying to generate high cash for the fund. Again, collected through interest points and so on. On the equity side, we're trying to generate returns, IRR, in the mid-20s and up. So what does that mean? It means that we're trying to get the cash flow, say, in the 10, 11, 12% range, and the rest is the appreciation or forced appreciation. So those two things mixed up create a diversification and the blended average approach to get us to hit the target returns.
You know, this has been great, and it really speaks to what we went over in the book and some of the other things that came up that most investors kind of deal with, right, when they make this decision on a fund, is what are some of the pros and cons of investing, say, in a fund compared to just investing with a single deal, right? A lot of these investors now are getting hit up for doing their own lending. They're doing their own little quick, 120-day loans. You and I even had a discussion last month about this from one investor considering going into the fund compared to doing their own deals. Can you kind of speak to some of the pros and cons of that decision?
Sure. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier. Time horizon is the number one of the key, maybe number one decisions. So if you need liquidity and you want to get your money back out, invest for short term. So if you're making a loan as an investor for 4 months or 6 months, that gives you an estimated time horizon when you're going to get your money back out. The fund is a little bit more longer term. So the decision whether to invest in individual deals or the fund, part of it is time horizon. The second element is sort of your risk tolerance. When you invest in a single deal, you have concentration of risk. It could be an equity deal where you are an equity investor and you are leveraging with a bank loan or such, or you could be a lender on a deal. You're actually providing a loan on a fix and flip project. Okay, from time to time, projects go bad. And if you have all your money in one basket, you're stuck until the property gets...
Makes sense. Right. You have no spread. There's nothing spread out of different multiple investments. You just are focusing on that one.
That's right. So fund has instant diversification. That's one of the key elements. The other important element is, are you an active investor or a passive investor? So when you invest in a fund, you're completely passive. You just get the benefits of the fund management running the fund, and you don't need to worry about anything else. If you are an active investor, you may want to analyze the deal, whether it's a loan or equity component. So if you like doing it, that may be a great opportunity for you. We work with both. We work with people who will only do individual deals because they're professional or semi-professional investors, and they don't like to be in a fund conceptually because they think they want to have control. But it's not only about control, it's about comfort level. And again, the other important question is how much capital you have to invest. If you have a little bit of money to invest, you could do maybe one deal, or you could put your money in the fund, and then the fund will do the diversification for you. But if you have a lot of money to invest, you can actually diversify between a fund and a bunch of other investments. So it's always prudent to diversify. And again, it's a function of how much money you're working with, and that helps you make a decision whether you take an individual deal or you invest in a fund. The basic risks of an individual deal is concentration of capital in a single deal, active involvement, and then the other important element that you got to be aware of. So if you're investing in an equity of a property and the bank requires you to sign a personal guarantee, you're taking a liability. There's nothing wrong with doing it. You may get a great loan and you may have absolutely phenomenal deal, but if things go upside down, you may be held responsible. So if a fund makes the investment, typically the fund manager signed for the loan, and we're looking for non-recourse loans typically when we invest from a fund. So that's another important consideration. The final kind of component of individual deal versus the fund is how is the fund manager or syndicator or project sponsor is getting compensated versus how it happens in a fund. So an example would be, again, you can invest in a single equity syndication deal, and if you understand the fee structure and you're comfortable with it, it may be totally fine. And that needs to be compared versus a fund, because the fund can invest into many syndications and many other assets. Probably one of the most important elements in the consideration is liquidity. So liquidity between knowing your own liquidity position and knowing the fund liquidity position is critical. If the fund has high liquidity and you need to request your capital, you may have better ability to get your money back out than if you invest in a single deal and the deal is stuck. So a lot of folks think, well, I want the money, only want to put it for 6 months. Yes, it's 6 months if all goes well. If the deal has problems, you need to be at least prepared to withstand foreclosure time and deal with this. So it's a two-edged sword, but keeping track of liquidity, the fees, the diversification, all those things make a big difference in the decision process.
So this has been great. It's spoke, I think, to so many folks that just want to audibly hear those answers. On the book, can they go to bigmikefund.com? Do you have it set up there where they can get the book and see some of the show notes there? Is that where it is?
Well, the book is on Amazon. They could search on Amazon how to choose a smart real estate investment fund. That's the name of the book. And or search by my name, Mike Zlatnik, and then I'll find the book. I am not yet 100% sure if the book is set up at bigmikefund.com. We have to double check. Well, that's the domain name, and we'll have the information, but we'll have the link to the book. People can go on tempofunding.com, and there's a link to the book from there. You can submit your request, and we can get you the book. So you can go to Amazon, or you can go to tempofunding.com, and there's a link to the book from the website.
That's great. Mike, you have anything else? This has been great.
No, I greatly appreciate you coming on this podcast. I appreciate all your help. You are the master blaster of this. You're phenomenal. I have tremendous love and respect for you. Having you here, talking with you is just phenomenal. I don't have anything else. I encourage folks to listen to this podcast on future episodes. Love starting this podcast. It's the first episode. It's the first, always a little bit anxious to do it, but I'm happy to do it. And I love to share my knowledge and experience with people, and love to help. My goal number one is to help them, not to do anything else. When people come to us and then they want us to invest in their deals, or they want to invest money with us, first question is how can I help you? Does this make sense to you? And if I understand what they're doing, the first goal is to help people. If they have a great deal, and give them feedback on their deal, I feel happy. If the deal gets better, or if they put the money to work. We've had situations, people have approached me and they said, listen, here's my money, take it. And I said, I can't take your money. I just I don't think it's the right circumstances. My job number one is to help people. That's it.
Servant leader. It's one of the reasons that you and I get along so well, and why folks have large and smaller amounts of money invest with you, feel confident, feel very trusting that you're going to take care of them. So this has been great. I appreciate you having them on here. And I'm looking forward to seeing everybody else that you have come on your podcast.
Sounds great, Corey. Thank you so much. Hope everybody has enjoyed this episode. Thank you very much. And looking forward to be talking to you soon enough.
Awesome. Thanks again, Mike.
Thank you, Corey.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnik. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.